Welcome to Arctica Podcast, a perspective from the North. I'm Matt Hook. My English name is Warren Jones. Join me as I talk to guests from all across the North about everything from culture, identity, to land stewardship. Whether you're from the North or simply curious about this region, Arctica offers a thought-provoking look at life in one of the world's most fascinating and beautiful places, the Arctic. This is Warren Jones, and I'm here today with my guest and good friend, Mary Sherbick. I'll let you introduce yourself, Mary.
Okay. Waka wingathu isak. Hello, my name is Mary Sherbick. My family comes from Bristol Bay, primarily Twin Hills, Togiak, Manicotok area. But I primarily grew up here in Anchorage, Alaska.
Cool. We met, I don't even remember what year it was, but it was when I was going to school. We met at UAA. I think the first time I ever saw you was at NSS, Native Student Services.
Oh, I think I remember the first time I saw you. I remember, I didn't see you actually. I heard you.
Yeah.
And you were like talking in the gathering area, you know, the living room with the couches. Uh-huh. It was at Native Student Services at UAA. And I just remember hearing some guy like going off on something, like probably philosophy.
Yeah.
And just like, sounded like a know-it-all, to be honest. And I was so aggravated because I was hyper-focused on, I think, an assignment. So I think it was like 2012, 2013, around that era. It was a couple years before I graduated, which was 2015. But I just remember thinking like, oh, I wish he would just be quiet. And it's funny because like, I think later on I met you, we like actually met in person either at an event there or through Native Student Council.
Mm-hmm.
In the Chamai room.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was like, oh, this guy is pretty cool. He's legit. He's an intellectual, like, indigenous guy. I could vibe with him. But I just remember seeing you and you had your thick black glasses and you're such a, you just gave me a weird vibe. And I just remember thinking like, oh, I probably will never be friends with that guy.
No, I can for sure be very loud and very annoying, you know, but I grow on you. You know what
you
I mean?
Did. Like, you did. You're very charming. And I was like, oh, he's really smart too. So, and the more I like interacted with you and your kids, I think the way you parented your kids, because you always had them with you, like almost always, not always, but it was refreshing to see how free you were with your kids. Like you just let them run around and just let them be themselves. Like I don't really recall you disciplining them unless they were going to try to hurt themselves or hurt someone else.
Yeah.
But other than that, you're like, ah, they're kids. We're going to let them. It made the whole environment at Native Student Services or in the Chamai room feel like a little village.
Yeah.
Because then you're just like, oh, yeah, there's Warren's kids. Everyone would take turns watching. It was Rowan and Cash at the time.
That's right. And they totally loved it there, and they loved all the attention. And I like the – I mean, what you're saying is that, like, it totally did bring a different kind of energy, and it was, like, a lot of times I had them there just because I had no choice, you know. So it's like – and I think from our, like, even our cultural perspective, it's like, you know, kids, just the way that you treat them and interact with them is different, you know. Like, you – like they're just their own little soul already. You know what I mean? Like you're not like the boss of them, even though you are the boss of them. You don't like own them.
Yeah.
You know, like you kind of respect them as like fellow human beings. And so like, even though sometimes I think people get annoyed with me and my kids just because like they do have a lot of freedom and they do get to question me and they do get to like, I think, act in ways that other kids don't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but they're growing into great, great humans, you know?
They
like
are.
They're really like self-aware. They feel empowered to talk to me about stuff and push back me. Like they don't always like win.
Yeah.
But like even in our family, like the thing is like, all right, well, you know, if you can like successfully like, you know, talk to me about this and like justify why you think you should do this thing. And like, if I'm wrong, I'll admit it, you know, and they do get their way a lot, but it's, you know.
Well, and I think when we were gathering in places that were, you know, Native Student Services or the Chamai room that were like, for Alaska Native people, I think there is more of a mutual understanding of like, oh yeah, this is, kids are welcome here. They're little human beings. They're growing. But when we were going to like non-Native events, I think I remember a lot of people looking at you a little differently when you had your kids running around.
Yes.
Like there's a different perspective and like philosophy around child rearing.
Yeah.
And like, I think in life in general, that's how it kind of always goes, right? Mm.
For sure. We were at a meeting at Chalista, which is one of the Native corporations here in town, which might not make sense to a lot of people, but we'll get into that at some point, I guess. But anyway, so the point was, is that it was like a room full of primarily Indigenous people. I had my kids there, and of course they were running around, and the CEO of Chilista was like up there talking, and Cash is up there like pulling on his pant leg, and like everybody was just completely ignoring the kids and just letting them run around because they're so used to it. And the only person that had an issue with it was the non-native lawyer, and she was super stressed out by the whole thing. Like, she was clearly like not happy with the fact that my kid was like tugging on his pant leg, but he literally just ignored him. He just like brushed him away, you know, and just kept talking, and like nobody, it didn't make a difference, you know?
Yeah.
But you're used to that, right? Mm-hmm. Like, in so many events that we have, there's just kids running around everywhere.
Or it's just a different culture, right? Yeah. Like, and that's like the work that you do is just, some people aren't comfortable with child rearing at a business meeting. But I work in a Native organization. I work for ANSEP, which is the Alaska Native Science and Engineering Program, for those who don't know. But so many, I can't tell you how many times people have been like, bring your baby. Like, we love babies here.
Yeah.
Like, bring them around. And so like, but if I worked at a different organization, I don't know if they'd have that same type of philosophy of like, oh yeah, bring your two-year-old who's trying to get into everything.
Yeah.
So I feel like the culture of where you work and where you like, even, I don't know, institutions such as universities, like the way you feel about yourself and you relate to others can impact the way you feel about not only yourself, but like being there and wanting to continue on.
Yeah.
So I think it's wild that we both met with our own backgrounds, and because I know your family has like, I don't want to get into that, but like, I think it's just a miracle that we both made it to the university level in general, right? Like, and then we learned more about, the ironic thing is that we learned more about like Alaska Native like history. And for, I mean, I can't speak for you, but I learned more about the Alaska Native like regional corporations and ANCSA, the Alaska Native Settlements Act, while I was at the University of Alaska Anchorage, which is like, I had to buy into that, to buy that information. I didn't get it at the public school, the Anchorage school district level, not to knock them, but it just wasn't available.
Well, there's just so much of our history that just isn't even talked about, like even recent history and things that are extremely relevant to our experience, right? Like same as you, I didn't like learn about this stuff until I was in college, you know? And it's like, why did I not ever question these things? Like, I just do it. Did I just assume everybody has a corporation, you know, that this is just like normal for people to have, you know? And
like, I think I did.
Yeah.
I thought everyone has a corporation, right? And I didn't realize until much older, like even Native corporations having that is an anomaly of it on its own.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. The context here is really interesting. You know, this, a lot of what we're talking about here is just like philosophy and perspective from the North. And I think it's perfect because like a lot of this has like a really pragmatic and practical aspects to it too, right? And even talking about like the cultural differences between the way that we like raise and view kids and the way that they're viewed in like environments and work environments is really important. And why like the places that we did have community at UAA were so important, I think, you know, and that's a little bit, you know, we've talked a little bit about community in the past and the importance of it, you know, and I think that there was such good examples at the university of that, you know, between the Native Student Services, the Chamai Room, and like Native Student Council, which was the student club that we were part of, you know, and all of those created a really great sense of community with all the people that were going to school there, you know, and it just highlights, number one, the importance of community, but also that you have to like create spaces for it. You know, you can't just expect community to coalesce, which it sometimes will, but it's just so much better when you create spaces for it.
Yeah, but I mean, there's sometimes where I feel like especially marginalized students or students that identify as like color or, you know, that have a different socioeconomic status, they do have a harder time finding that sense of community in places or institutions such as university settings, right? Because like historically, universities were for white males, like for white men.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like when you provide that space for people to be themselves, for Alaska Native kids to be themselves, they have that opportunity to feel a sense of belonging and more of a likelihood to connect with others and wanting to stay there and wanting to be part of that community. But I feel like there is so often more, often than not, a lot of students don't find that sense of community for whatever reason or just don't connect. And that's, I think that's really difficult, especially in this day and age where we have like so much technology that divides us. I was actually just listening to a lecture earlier today about Research's Ceremony from Sean William or Wilson. And he was just talking about how, you know, how there's like we have that, we have to have that relationship with the environment and with each other in yeah. order to like really be human beings in a sustainable kind of way. Because mm-hmm. If you don't, if you divorce yourself from nature, like all the time I'm in my little car or in my office, or even we've created digital individual spaces where we don't even have to interact with reality a lot of the time, like physical reality, that we just get honed in and can get so disconnected. Yeah. And I think that's what breaks down community. And when you don't have community, how are you supposed to even like, I don't know, work together in order to sustain a broader thing, not just like at a family level or at a city level or village level for some of us, but like even at a national level or global level.
Yeah.
Like it just, when you don't have it, it just is really hard. So I feel like that's one of the core things is that you do have to have is you have to have a sense of community.
Yeah. It's interesting to think about, though, because it's like, you know, in some ways, you know, we can create communities that didn't exist before because of, you know, things like social media and stuff like that, you know, but they're just almost not the same as like the in-person community,
mm-hmm.
you know, that I don't know. I just being with each other, you know, I'm like feel pretty fortunate in my neighborhood that I know pretty much all my neighbors all around.
Yeah.
You know, and that, but I didn't feel that in other places. Like we lived in these condos and it was like, no sense of community whatsoever. And even when my neighbors called a cop on me because he saw me walk in and didn't recognize me, you know, unless it's like, dude, I've been living here like 8 years, dude.
Like, which is funny because it's like you're in closer quarters with each other,
yeah.
but you're so separated.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just all those little condos, the kind of off, was it C Street, like over by C
yeah,
Street.
I remember, you know, and, yeah, I remember when you
and
lived
it's
over
just
there.
Funny because it's like you'd think there'd be a sense of community because it's like such a small little area, mm-hmm. you know, and everybody lives so close together, but there really wasn't much of a sense of community at all.
Yeah. Do you feel like, so I know with your background, you grew up like in, was it Nome mm-hmm. area? And before that, did you live in a smaller community in a rural village?
Yeah, I lived in Hooper Bay, but it was only for like a month, so I don't really remember it.
Yeah. But Nome is still significantly yep. smaller compared to Anchorage.
Yep.
When you transitioned, did you feel that loss of sense of community, or did you find a pocket where you really gained more of a sense of community moving to the city?
Well, we moved from Nome out to Palmer in the valley. You know, so it's not like, what is it, like 6,000-7,000 people or whatever mm-hmm. in Palmer. Fortunately, a bunch of our family already lived there, and so that was primarily my community, was just, you know, my family members and stuff like that. You know, I did eventually find some, but it just wasn't the same. Like, just in Nome, it's got like, the community is kind of like built in,
yeah.
you know. One of the things I even wrote for our organization was just talking about like our camps, you know, and so like our fish camps and stuff like that. And there was like a whole other community that exists during that time. You know what
yeah.
I mean? Like it's a, not temporary, what's the word I'm looking for? You know, when you like move around. So, like, people aren't there all year round, but during, like, fish season, like, there's tons of people there. Everybody's at camp, you know?
Yeah,
so it's
nomadic.
Like a whole different community, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and we had all these different cabins, and, like, you just go to these different places, and there's a whole separate community from Nome,
mm-hmm.
you know? That's different.
Yeah, and I think one of the things, I mean, we're throwing out community a lot, but what yeah. does that mean? For me, I feel like it's definitely where you have shared values. And that's what, I mean, we talked about Native corporations. I think Alaska Native corporations, I think that's what kind of separates them from, you know, your regular Joe Schmo type of corporations, is that the value system is much different, you know.
Yeah.
Like Alaska, they bring in Alaska Native values into their corporations.
Yeah.
And I've worked for one, so I could, at Bristol Bay Native Corporation, within their nonprofit sector,
yeah.
so the Education Foundation. But I just remember that the sense of community meant like, oh, we share. Our part of our value system is to share. And there was always like someone bringing in native food, like whether it was smoked salmon or gudeg. Like I tried all different kinds of a gudeg because I worked there. And it was just, it's a beautiful thing when you share that type of our soul food. Like
yeah.
it tastes better.
yeah.
Like it just is nicer. And that's one thing that you don't get from the digital realm either, or the digital world, like social media, is like when you get together and you like, I feel like sharing food is such a universal thing. Like, oh, like when I see pictures of people processing salmon or dry fish, like you almost wish you could smell it.
Yeah.
like, and sometimes you can.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
like when you're there in person with people and you're sharing food, like rye bread and, you know, baked salmon and just it's halibut. It's so good. And that's what I think helps bring community together, too, is like we all kind of do our part and try to share and those value systems.
Yeah, I think I totally agreed. And a lot of the shared experience, I think, is important. You know, it's like I find it a lot easier just because there's a bunch of stuff that I don't have to explain. You know, it's interesting to think about, like, our context here in Alaska, especially as Alaska Natives. I mean, all the stuff that I did growing up and the world that I lived in is, like, so exotic, you know, to the whole rest of the United States, you know, where I was, like, essentially a minor celebrity in the States, you know, like, well, this dude's from Alaska, you know, and I know people don't really like the word Eskimo, but that's like, you know, what they understood, right? You know, like the dude's an Eskimo, like, holy crap, you know, and one person even told me that they didn't think that we were real. You know, they thought we were like gnomes or fairies. They thought we were like made up, you know, I was like, oh, we're pretty real, you know, like.
Yeah, I remember traveling internationally. I used the term Eskimo because when I used Yupik, no one knows outside of Alaska. I mean, maybe some people in the lower 48. Would know what Yupik means, but so I had to be like, I'm an Eskimo, and they're like, oh, so then they have a better understanding. And a lot of people, I mean, internationally speaking, were like, Alaska's part of the United States,
even?
Like it was a very different experience. But I feel like the only people who I felt like I would connect with if I said I was I'm indigenous or other, or when I'm Alaska Native or other indigenous folk, like where you don't have to explain, because there's so much shared values there in like especially folks from the Arctic, you know, like the Arctic, anyone else from the Arctic, you could just really relax and be yourself because there is a lot of like overlap of value and like just knowing like what you've experienced, you've probably gone through something very similar with, or they have gone through something similar that you've gone through, like living in a rural community, not having access to things that you would typically on the road system. Like out in Twin Hills, there isn't even a store out there.
Yeah.
You have to go down the road to the cannery to get something. And even then it's like mostly a fish supply store.
Yeah.
So you have to go across the bay.
There was definitely a lot of that, what you're talking about, that shared connection, like even for that First Nations Futures program, that was like the Maori and the Hawaiians and Alaska Natives, you know, and that's like where we were connecting, is that there was a lot of shared experience, you know, all throughout the colonial places, you know, that there was, and again, it was just nice, you know, because it's like a lot of stuff that you don't have to explain, you know what I mean? Like they just get it, you know, they already know, you know, and so like, there's so much that you don't have to kind of like waste time explaining, you know, whereas like when I'm having certain conversations with other people, I mean, there's so much context I have to go back to and explain, you know, and I'm trying to like be really careful about like acronyms and things that, you know, that I know and that I know a lot of people in our community know, but just don't mean anything to anybody else.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Like humor, I feel like for a lot of mainstream media, they really miss how humorous Indigenous communities can be. And when I say Indigenous, I mean like Alaska Native and Native Americans. Because I think in the past, they viewed us as very stoic and or savage. But it's like, we could be quite funny. We could be really hilarious. And I think some of the funniest people I know are, you know, Alaska Native people. And it really does like make you look at life differently. And I think it's because of all the hardships that we have gone through and that we still are here and we're able to make light of a lot of like, you know, the genocide and the resident schools and just a lot of hardships that Indigenous folk, especially Alaska Natives, have gone through.
Yeah.
But I don't know. And I also love like your whole Indigenous philosophy, because we do have our own philosophy system and how we relate to the environment and how, you know, we could be doing things, I think, at a Western civilization point, we could be learning a lot from that Indigenous philosophy on how to be more sustainable in our livelihoods and with our relationships with one another and with ourselves even, and especially with the environment.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's that's one of the big things that I see that's, I don't know, from a cultural perspective, that there's some things that just don't work together, you know, and I think that, you know, the way that we view the environment is just strictly as like this resource and thing to be used, you know, and we don't like recognize it as its own entity, right? You know, and that's like, to me, one of the, I mean, it has to be one of the biggest differences between like the Western and indigenous worldview, you know, is that like this recognition of like this, the spirit that suffuses everything. And I don't like, I hate that we have to use that word only because I think it has so much like baggage with it, like New Age baggage and like, you know, like the way that the word spirit is used in general.
Oh, with the like, zeitgeist, it's been thrown around a bunch that it's kind of diluted its meaning.
Yeah, you know, and we met, it was something much more nuanced and much more deep than that. You know what I mean? That
oh, yeah. There's an entire, spirit is sacred. Yeah. Like there's, I feel like sometimes Western folks forget that things can be sacred still.
Yeah.
Like that you that, and especially like when it comes to ceremony, because I don't know if you've ever practiced in ceremony before, but I've only done it once really when I was becoming a woman. And that felt like, I was like, oh, I'm becoming a woman. There's things that I need to be doing to prep myself for that, for womanhood. Mm-hmm. And my aunties really like took me in and I had to do a ceremony off the beach, like with ash and everything. But it turned really humorous because it was pretty windy and I had to let go. I think it was metaphorical for me to throw ash. I think it was just like wood ash and I had to throw it because I'm throwing away my girl-like sense and becoming a new woman. But it was really windy. So when I threw it, it went right into my auntie's face and she's like, ah! But yeah, I'll never forget that because of that humorous part, but it was just I just also remember thinking like, oh yeah, I'm a woman now.
Yeah.
And I have to be in the world. People are going to view me differently and I have to behave accordingly.
Yeah.
But like there was a ceremony. There was like something sacred there and we did it on our homelands. Like, so it, for me, I think like ceremony is that bridge that brings us back to our ancestors in that spiritual realm, and that we practice it, but still in a way that is, you have to have it adapted to the current times.
Yeah.
And I mean, I hate to bring Sean Wilson up again, but he talks about like how he wants to have ceremony brought into like a digital realm, but how a lot of folks view that as sacrilegious because it's like, ooh, does it really belong in a digital realm?
Mm-hmm.
And I think if we want to have indigenous philosophies, if we want to have like Alaska Native perspectives be kind of, if we want more people to have awareness, the best tool that we have is things like podcasting and video and social media. So I feel like we have to bring it to a digital realm. Like, we don't have any other choice. We need to adapt. And that's the one thing that I feel like indigenous people have been so good at. I almost cussed. I don't know if we could do that or not. Yes. But I got really passionate for a second. Mm. I was like, that's what indigenous folks are so good at, is adapting to their environment. And they adapt to their environment because they have a relationship with that environment, like you were saying.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you have to have that relationship with the environment in order to, like, keep adapting, because the outside world is changing all the time and it always will. And mm-hmm. the way that you can prepare for that change is to have that intimate relationship with it instead of divorcing yourself from it. Because I think that's why we're coming up with these issues, is that a lot of us have divorced ourselves from nature.
Yeah. Yeah, that kind of, you're reminding me too of, you know, I think that one of the things that I wanted to talk to you about is just that, you know, I feel like we're in an interesting place as Indigenous people, like in the era that we're in, you know what I mean? Like, it's, or like I was talking about earlier, maybe it was not on microphone, but like about how my mom remembers like the first time she ever saw like a snow machine, you know, first time she ever saw a plane. You know, when she was a kid, they were still living in sod houses and the Kajgi, the men's house, was still there, you know, and like, it's kind of weird to think about it because I still feel like I'm like living in the future sometimes. You know what I mean? I'm like looking at my phone and going like, man, this is like, it's kind of crazy to think about the world that I live in and how rapidly things have changed, you know? Talking to one of my uncles too, I mean, he was reflecting on the same thing and he's like, man, it's like we just came out of the tundra. You know, I was like, well, I mean, we basically did, you know, and then here we are, you know, this many generations later, and now, you know, a lot of things have changed, you know, but we're still here, you know, but we're also kind of, I hate the two worlds thing because I think there's only one world and there's just different interpretations of it, mm-hmm. you know, and different ways of understanding it. But there's only one world, right? Yeah. You know, so like when there's no walking in two worlds, right? You know, but I definitely feel that way in a lot of ways just because, you know, even though I was raised primarily in like Western schools and things like that, I did learn a lot when I was a kid, but like a lot of it was just basically essentially like Western indoctrination, right? You know, it's mm-hmm. like I'm like learning about the Western way and Western values and Western culture like my whole life and not even ever have any awareness of it, right? Like they just, these assumptions get so like deeply rooted in what we're doing. And so I feel like a lot of my process of decolonization has been internal, you know, like.
In what ways do you think?
Well, just like when I first started doing a lot of the work around culture, you know, I turned my eye inward and like took a look at myself and realized that I was basically just a white guy, you know, and like it was kind of disappointing, but I didn't beat myself over it too much because I realized I'm going like, okay, well, this is just all I've been taught, right? You know, and
yeah. And when you say that, do you mean like you've just had this mentality of this is the like value system wise or the way you had to live your life? Like, what do you mean by you?
Yeah.
You're just a white guy.
No, the value systems for sure. Yeah. And like the worldview, like I at the time had bought into like almost like a strictly like scientific worldview, was extremely mm-hmm. skeptical, you know, had all these like plans for my life, you know, that this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to join the military. I'm going to get out. I'm going to go to school. I'm going to get a good job. I'm going to get a hot wife and a big truck. And you know what I mean? Like, and like when I think back on it now, I'm just like, fuck, that's cringe, bro. Like, you know, I mean, in some ways, just because like I did get a lot of it, you know what I mean? Like I have a really good life now, but then it ended up really not making me that happy.
Yeah. I feel you like know? It's a pipe dream. And yeah. part of that almost sounded like the American dream.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, that's just like, what it was, right? Like yeah. I was socialized just the same as almost every other man in America in a lot of ways, you know, and my life and views and everything reflected that, you know. And
do you still catch yourself like being, because I feel like I am Alaska Native, and I've always, I mean, I don't know if I've always identified it, because I don't want to age myself, but I'm in my early 30s, mm-hmm. and it wasn't always okay to be Alaska Native, you know, there was a time, like, I was in elementary school where I was in middle school, and a girl was saying something about another Alaska Native girl that someone was like, oh, she's too Native. And someone said, oh, she's only half Native. And she's like, that's too much. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I'm half Native. And yeah. she's like, oh, but not you, though, like yeah. that other one. And I was just like, what does that even mean? What does it mean to be like Alaska Native? Or why do I feel like I'm too Native in the city and I'm not Native enough when I'm in the village?
Yeah.
Like, I felt like so like a cognitive dissonance to being Alaska Native. And for a long time, the culture did not allow for you to be comfortable being Alaska Native.
Yeah.
Like it wasn't there yet. I mean, now it's so much different, right? Like, I feel like there's a lot of like, embrace that indigenousness and like embrace what being Alaska Native, embrace being a Yupik woman. Embrace it. Like, but I didn't have that growing up. And I felt like it took a while. I think it took until college for me to really like claim that as part of my identity, like yeah. a core aspect of myself. And then once I started doing that, I started to really break down some of my own values, because I still catch myself having that perspective of the American dream of like, oh yeah, I got to have the house and the partner and the car and the child and the, you know, it. And it's like, wait, is that part of my value system? And some of it, I think, is shared, because Indigenous folk and Western folk have a lot of shared values,
yeah.
but they are distinct in their approaches on things, like yeah. respect, even, you know, like when you're talking to someone, like me looking you directly in the eye in the Yuchten way, that's highly disrespectful. Mm-hmm. Like, I should be looking down, talking mm-hmm. to you. Like, I don't even know if I should be talking to you. Yeah. But in a Western way, that's disrespectful if you don't look into someone's eyes when you're speaking, right?
Yeah.
So it's like totally opposite.
Yeah. I mean, this is like, I don't know. I guess it was like one of the biggest reasons why I wanted to like understand and like study culture was to just really understand what those differences, you know, were. And when I came to that, you know, I mean, I guess it would be a new moment of awareness there too, you know, about myself. It was good though, because then it allowed me to be like, okay, well, you know, what are my values? You know, what is like, you know, what kind of essentially like, where, if this isn't who I want to be, then who am I supposed to be?
Mm-hmm.
You know? And, you know, at that point, like I started just kind of like radically accepting a lot of our stories and values, you know what I mean? Just going like, all right, you know, like we're just going to accept all of these as though they were true. You know, I won't say that I completely abandoned my previous worldview because I just think that there's a lot of things that it's really hard to become aware of. You know, especially with like regards to yourself, right? Like self-awareness is actually really hard, you know, and dude, like you can lie to yourself so much and I've lied to myself so much, you mm-hmm. know, and like, and it's not until you realize it that you know, but like, I just kind of essentially replaced a bunch of my previous beliefs with going like, all right, let's check out these indigenous ones. Let's see if they're any good. And it turns out for me, at least they were better. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, the way that we conceptualize ourselves, the way that we conceptualize our world, you know, the, like every piece
and when,
of
when you say better, you just made you feel better.
Well, it made more sense to me. It I made, should yeah. say, yeah, yeah. We shouldn't try to, you know.
Yeah,
what I mean?
I don't like, want to demonize yeah, yes, yeah. anybody, yeah, but yeah. like, yeah, I think because their value system that comes from our own people that, and for the longest time we were just told not even our language, like in not speaking Alaska Native, our Alaska Native tongues, it totally like brings us away from philosophies and yeah. worldviews, because then you start to think in English, and I dream in English, but my grandma, she dreamed in Yuchten. Mm-hmm. Like she has such a different worldview than I do because everything gets lost in translation.
Yeah.
Like it's not the same. So like even us just speaking English now, like we have such a different kind of worldview because of that. But I get what you're saying, like some of that in that, because I feel like the new age term would be like radical self-acceptance, but indigenous folk have had that for millennia. Like, yeah. we've had like this, you have to have like a radical sense of self in order to even connect with others and the environment.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I definitely think, you know, especially the part about like knowing yourself, and I mean, it was just so important, right? Like, mm-hmm. even though I've said before that I think awareness was the central tenet of our culture, I've changed my stance on that. It's definitely the spirit, right? Mm-hmm. But like awareness is something like a spirit has, you know? And like when I was like trying to explain like how to understand it, I mean, every single one of you knows what it's like to be a spirit because you are a spirit, right? You know, and there's like the irreducible like element of yourself that's always been there, right? Your whole life. Like you can think back as far back as you can remember to your very first memories. And like, it's always been you, you know what I mean? Like your body changes, your mind changes, your scheme of information changes, all these things change, but there's like a you that remains, right? Mm-hmm. And like, it's interesting because it's like, it's something that we can directly observe in ourselves. We know what it's like, you know, and it's so weird because you can't even deny it, you know, like all the ways that we express it, like music and poetry and theater, like this is not something mundane, you know, not something that can be explained like, oh, just, this is the physics, this is the equation of this, you know, the ballet, you know, and that doesn't really like encompass what's happening here, right? Mm-hmm. Like we're clearly, like you're a soul, right? But you can't like directly observe it in other people, right? Like I have no idea what it's like to be you, right? Like mm-hmm. I've got a pretty good idea. You know, we're both humans. We both, you know, have some shared experience and stuff like that. But like what it's like to be you, I never know it, right? Mm-hmm. I can't directly observe it in you. I can infer it in you, right? But like if this table had a soul, you know what I mean? Like, how would you be able to observe it, you know, when you can't even observe it in other people? And if the table did have a soul and a soul that was very different than ours, you know, like, how could we, you know, understand that, you know? And it's just, you know, not that that's like proof positive of, you know, what our worldview, like whether it's true or not, but it's totally tenable and it totally works, right? Like,
yeah.
You know, and just understanding that these things, even though they're not like us, you know, they're like us in the fact that they all have like a spirit or a soul, right? You know, but that needs to be respected, right? Mm-hmm. And like the way that it gets explained, and there's some really interesting ones. Like one is that, like, you know, tools that are made for a certain purpose like to be used for that purpose. They like to be treated well. They like to be taken care of, right? One of them is like messes like to be cleaned up. Like messes don't like to be messes, you know? And it's so interesting to like think about it, and it sounds so weird. But I guess at this point, like having like fully incorporated the view into my own life at a really radical level, it's like it just makes sense to me,
yeah.
You know, that like, do I think like a table, you know, can talk or something like that? No, mm-hmm. But it certainly has its own awareness and it certainly exists, you know, and that, I don't know. It's, but there's a lot of like implications for the worldview, right?
Oh, yeah.
You know, like.
I feel like I had one just when I was at Kasilov, so. Me and Howdy went to Kasilov for 4th of July, and when we first got there, I was already in a bad mood because I felt like we could have gotten there earlier because my friend was there and they limited out, right? And I felt like we missed out on that. And for the first couple days, I wasn't catching any real fish. I caught like one each day. But I was also going out fishing with an ungrateful heart.
Yeah.
I was like expecting the fish to come to me because I was just like, I want to limit out. And I was, but I was so sour. And I felt it. And Howdy kept telling me, like, just be thankful you got one today. Like, he always, like, grounds me. He helps bring me back. Because I feel like sometimes I just get so angry and so, like, wrapped up in it. And I'm trying to, like, even build down what is anger. Because I've been talking about it with my therapist. And sometimes it just means, like, you're hurt. And it's harder to say that because it's vulnerable to say, like, oh, I'm hurt. But so the third day, I finally was like, okay, I'm just going to be thankful for one fish. Like, it's really a blessing that we're even out here being able to fish with the resource. Like, Howdy has a four-wheeler. His dad has one. We have an awesome tent. They had an RV that Marceline was staying in, and they had a side-by-side. Like, we had all the equipment, like, in everything to go get the fish. If I can get one fish, I'd be happy. And I got one fish almost immediately. And then I was like, okay, if I can get another fish, I'll be thankful. And I got another fish. And it was funny because everyone else around us weren't getting fish, but me and Howdy kept getting fish. And I think it was because I came with it with more of a grateful heart. And it, like, it was my philosophy of, like, I will just be grateful for one. Like, and I know what I'm going to do with this fish. I'm going to process it. I'm going to give it away. I'm going to give it away to family, to friends. Like, I had a plan even before I set foot in the water of what I was going to do with that fish. And the first thing was, like, I'm going to be grateful for it. Yeah. And that changed. That day we caught 22.
Yeah.
And so I was like, oh, this is awesome. I need to remember gratitude really can make a whole, it changes your, the way you interact with reality.
Yeah. You know, one of the first things that I was doing when I was starting this whole journey too, was that, like, I was being really intentional about, like, thanking and being aware of everything. And it did feel kind of silly because I'm like, in the morning, like, cracking eggs, thanking the chickens and, you know, thinking about the turkeys for my turkey bacon and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, that has, like, the side effect of, like, making you really aware of what you're doing, you know, and that, you know, in one of my writings, I was talking about, you know, that I just, the sheer number of souls that I consume on any given day, you know, and that, like, it's, but there's, like, you just have to be, like, thankful about it, right? Like, the souls need to be appreciated and respected, you know? And this is why we treat, you know, our game the way that we do. That's why we treat our catch the way that we do, you know? Yeah. Is that, like, you recognize that the sacrifice is being made for you, you know? And so, you know, they say that the souls themselves appreciate that kind of care, you know, and they,
Good. I feel like after the fish were willing to sacrifice themselves to me when I came at it with a grateful heart. And, like, yeah, we try to be within our Alaska Native Indigenous, like, we try to be as intentional as possible when we're processing salmon. But it's also, like, I feel like there is that life cycle of, like, well, even the parts that we don't use, it goes back into the ocean. It goes back into enriching the animal life out there, or you can use it for, like, in the soil. And, like, I feel like there is definitely, like, Cordelia Kelly, our shared friend, she always jokes. She's like, you have that Yupik, like, perspective that everything is so cyclical. And I was like, I do. I always believe in that. Even, like, karma, like, I believe that I try so hard to put out, like, good energy when I'm talking to people or when I'm in a room. But when I don't, I notice that comes back to me. If it's not from that person, it's from someone else.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's an intrinsic, like, type of Indigenous value, or just a value that I almost feel like it's a fact. Like, it is the nature. I feel like there's laws of nature, and one of them is karma.
Yeah.
That whatever you throw out there comes back to you. And I think in physics, it's, what is that? One of Newton's laws about, like, energy never really dies. It just gets transferred over.
I'm not sure on that one, but it's something that's like roughly correct. Yeah. I don't know what the exact thing is.
That's how I feel about, like, karma. Like, it doesn't actually, like, just go into the abyss. It always comes back.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, it makes a lot of sense too, because like we lived with great care, and I guess, you know, even though I don't, you know, we didn't have like the word karma, but certainly it's the same thing, right? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like the way that you like live with it, like will come back on you.
Yeah, being a real human being. I feel like almost all Alaska Native people, I feel, because Yupik just means the real person, like the real human being. And I think Inupiaq means the same thing, right?
A lot of them do.
Yeah. So you know, I'm like, all of us are claiming to be the real human being, because you have to have these, like, you have to have like this value system or the way that you live, like Yukiyuk, right? Like The Way of the Human Being, that book by Harold Napoleon, right? Mm-hmm. I really love that book. It's really short, but man, he really like highlights the way that there's just certain things that you do if you're a real person. Yeah. And I think intrinsically part of that is like you have to have that relationship with the environment, and you have to be sustainable. You have to think about generations, not just like you and your family, but you have to think about generations after you.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like Indigenous people are really mindful of that.
Yeah, you know, that's one of the, I think, the strengths that, especially when you come to things like conservation with like the Indigenous view, is that like it's inherently long term. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like the whole worldview and everything like that, like is geared towards the long term. It also, though, it's very much informed by the past. You know, and so that's why I like it, right? You know, mm-hmm. It's like this worldview that's informed by the past, because it's the past that, you know, that helps you to like decide your trajectory for the future, right? Like in Inuit culture in general, I think the future was just largely considered like something that you couldn't predict, just like the weather. Like you could do your best, you could make short predictions, you know, but like long-term predictions were really sketchy because things could change at any moment, right?
Yeah.
Reminds me of the sea navigators. I think it was the Tahitians. Well, I think it was Hawaiians that were telling us about it. But they were saying, you know, this is the way they navigate when they're using the stars to navigate, is they use the stars behind them to dictate their direction forward.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's important because it's like, especially for us, like you need to like understand your past, you know, in order to inform to help you to understand where you're at and then inform where you want to go in the future, right?
Mm-hmm.
But like, American culture is so like future oriented, you know, and that's like even when, you know, when I talked about my worldview previously, you know, like all my thoughts were future oriented.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I wasn't very present. I was constantly like living towards some future goal that I was nowhere near, you know, but like constantly like worried about that rather than actually being in the present or even thinking about my past,
mm-hmm.
you know, and all that stuff has a huge bearing on where I was at, right? Like, you know, now, even with, like, the therapy stuff, it's surprising how much time I spent in the past. You know what I mean? Like, going like, okay, you know, but I didn't have the level of awareness that I do now. You mm-hmm. know, it's kind of sad that I don't think awareness is, it's either not very high or maybe it's not even on the American hierarchy values at all. You know, I think it's kind of like one of the defining things, like, when you think about an archetypal American, you know, one of them is kind of like a lack of self-awareness.
Yeah.
You know, and I certainly felt that, like, especially when I was, like, overseas. You know, at some point, like realizing, I've spent, you know, maybe almost 30 years being not very aware of myself, you know, and then even now I almost feel like a child, you know, I'm like 45 now and I feel like a child in terms of like that development of who I am.
Yeah. But even when we're introducing ourselves as Alaska Native people, almost always, like no matter which tribe you come from, you have to announce like who's your father, who's your mother, who's your grandparents, where are they from, like it, you have to have that linkage to your heritage in order to have that sense of awareness and like know who you are now. Like, and I think it was Yvonne Peters, when he worked for the University of Alaska Fairbanks, he had us do like this exercise. It was called like Seven Generations, and we had to think about the seven generations before us. And then that we are the seventh generation and that the seven generations ahead of us. Mm-hmm. And we had to do like a mind experiment about that, like looking back at seven generations ago, like what was that like? And like how much sacrifice and how much work went into you being here now? And then what are you going to put into so that seven generations from now, like what can you say that you've put into?
And
yeah, that was like, I felt like that was a mind trip, because it's like, I don't think I've ever thought of that before or in that way.
Yeah, that's, I like that too, because like, this is like, you know, even thinking about the way that we do our like naming system, you know, and like the way that you get your names, you know, you inherit your name from somebody that came before you that passed away and like so on and so forth. Right. And like, I remember like really thinking about that, that one of the things that that does is it puts it into like, makes it really clear to you, you know, that you're related to the people that came before you, that, you know, that in a lot of ways, like everything that happened before you, you know, contributed to you being here now, you know, and like kind of like a respect for that, which I think can be hard for a lot of people. One of my friends was talking about, she's like, yeah, but when I do that, my grandpa is really, really bad racist, man. And, you know, and I'm like, it's hard for them to like, and I'm like, okay, that's fair. I mean, you know, my dad was kind of a terrible dude too, you know, but I don't know. It doesn't really matter, right?
Yeah.
Like, because, I mean, this is literally true for everybody, that you're part of a chain of humans, you know, that, like, we didn't get here alone. You know, I used to joke and say that, like, you know how we got here? We shit and fucked our way here, you know, like, all throughout history, you know, and here we are, right?
yeah, but even what your Anupac name, it's so old that you lost the meaning, or
one of
I've
the,
heard you talk about
yeah,
it
yeah,
before.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So recently, one of the Greenlandic people was telling me that, you know, that the name still means something there, and it's like something like old woman.
Will you say it again?
Marok.
Marok.
Yeah.
Okay. And mine's Isak, but I think the meaning means like shh, but I was named after my uppies, Ali, so my grandpa's sister, but I'm one of like three Isaks. Like, I think another thing is like, if you know a lot of this, you hear the same Yupik name from other people, you know how prominent that person, that individual was.
Yeah.
Then you realize like, oh, this was like a very impactful person.
They, yeah.
Like, cause even like, I think there's like my, when my mom passed away, her, one of her Yupik names, and sometimes you get more than one Yupik name or, you know, a native name, was Nalikuta. And after she passed away, there's so many Nalikutas running around now.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, hey, Lou Nali.
Yeah. I'm hoping there'll be a lot when I pass away.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Like, hopefully. I hope I
mean,
I can.
It's definitely happened before. I mean, like, so, you know, I'm definitely not the only Marok, you know, and like, it was just, you know, it was my great grandma, Mamie Seton, you know, and like, when people that are really well respected die, you know, people really want to name, you know, name their kids after them. And a lot of that had to do with that. You know, they say that you take on some of the characteristics of who you get named after.
I was just going to say, do you think you took on any of those characteristics?
Yeah, that's what they all say. You know, all my aunts and uncles call me Grandma or Mr. Jones, you know, and like they just, you know, I'm that she was a very kind of bossy, powerful old woman, you know, and here I am. You know, I kind of feel like that sometimes.
My Appa said his sister was like, had a good sense of humor. So I feel like everyone that I know is a sock does have a pretty good sense of humor. So I would agree like that we take on a little bit of that. I know like for when you received your native name, did you have to like grow up a little bit before you received it, or did you just get it right away?
I got it right away.
Okay. Because I got my name right away, but it came from my, like, and it comes from an elder usually. Who named you?
Probably my aunts or uncles, I would imagine. So... I actually didn't have an English name for the first little bit of my life.
What? You didn't? I didn't even know this about you.
Yeah, no. You know, typical, like, sad, like, native story, I guess. You know, my dad just never showed up. But he told my mom to wait to name me, so my mom waited to name me, and so I didn't have a name. So they just called me Mr. Jones, you know. But the only real name that I had was my Yupik name. I didn't get my birth certificate until like 1986 or something like that. But
yeah, but it's fitting. It's your real human name is your Anupac name.
Yeah, I do like Warren Richard Jones though.
Yeah, it has a ring to it. Mm-hmm. Warren is a good name.
Yeah.
Who are you named after? Do you know, like, for Warren?
Yeah, so the team in Hooper Bay is called the Hooper Bay Warriors. And my mom called me Warren because I was her little warrior.
Oh, that's so precious.
Yeah.
That makes my heart just so happy.
Yeah.
That's adorable. I was named Mary because both of my grandmas, so my mom's mom and my dad's mom, were both named Mary.
Yeah.
And so they're just like, oh, Mary is easy. And it's funny because I think my mom thought I was going to be a boy, so they had like Michael picked out, but instead I was Mary. And then they did have a boy like 3 kids later. So I do have a little brother named Michael. Yeah. But that would have been my name if I were a boy.
Yeah, it's funny, you know, because that naming stuff, I think it extends even to English names, right? Like, you'll often get named, like, your English name after your ancestor, too, you know? Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of Josephs and a lot of Roberts. And then there's, like, funny because we got Roberta's and then Alberta, who's named after Albert, and Justina, who's named after Justin. You know, and like you just have a lot of names like that. And also as a result of that, we often have like names that you just don't hear anymore, you know, so like Agnes and Bertha, you know, like literally like
I know
names
an Agnes
that,
and a Bertha.
Yeah, they like people just don't name like that anymore, but they're just, that's what happens. You know, you'll see a newborn baby named Bertha, you know, and like you just don't see those names in the rest of the culture, I don't think.
Yeah.
At least not that I've seen, you know.
Yeah. And then almost no one asks for English name meanings. But if you hear like an indigenous name, they're like, what does it mean?
Mm-hmm.
They like just romanticize or exoticize it and like it must have a meaning.
Warren is like protector or defender.
Mary is Sea of Bitterness. Uh-huh. So, but they changed the meaning after, I think, Jesus Christ's mother died. Because it used to mean rebellious, but I think in the Hebrew way, they changed that meaning and they changed it to Sea of Bitterness after.
I kind of like that, though.
I really do, too. I was like, I like the history of it. I, like, did a deep dive on Mary. I don't know why, because no one ever asked me, what does Mary mean?
Well, I just think names are really important in general.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know?
I think
and they
so
were
too.
Super important in our culture, which is actually not something that I, like, have a really deep understanding of.
Yeah, Marceline means, I think part of it means something with Mars, like defender of Mars. But then another meaning of it just means warrior. So that's one of the reasons why me and Howdy really liked Marceline.
Yeah.
I was like, she's going to, or young warrior. I was like, she's going to need to be a young warrior if she's growing up in this day and age.
Yeah, I know. Sometimes I feel like I think about this a lot, and I don't want to say that I feel bad, but I have a lot of anxiety around our kids. You know, like it's because I know a lot of people that don't have kids and like, you know, that, and their reason is literally because they're just like, this, I'm not bringing in a child into this world, you know, which I, even though I have four kids, I have sympathy for that. You know, I'm going like, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, like things are.
For Indigenous folks, the world has ended time and time in memoriam for
that's
us.
That's true.
So we're not terrified. In fact, it's almost our duty to keep having kids because we've tried to be killed off so many times.
Yeah.
So it's just like, I think in that perspective, and I've heard that from other Indigenous folks, I don't want to like claim that that's my own perspective, but like there's a lot of other Indigenous folks where it's like, it's been the end of the world for us a lot.
Yeah.
Like we've lived in Armageddon a lot of times and we still have children because that's something that like it calls to us.
Yeah.
Not everybody. I don't want to speak for every Indigenous person. I know that some people are literally terrified because of climate change and just the political, socio-political climate, everything. But I still feel like it's not as bad as I think we make it out to be because we have the alarms going all the time because of access to 24-hour news coverage, which puts a lot of people in a like fear-like state. I was watching it a lot during COVID, and I was always terrified.
Yeah,
and I just stopped because I was like, "This is not really helping me anymore."
Yeah, I do think there's a level that you should disconnect. I mean, I definitely had to do it for a little while because it's like I remember I didn't have like Facebook for like 4 or 5 years. Like I just got off it, you know. And everybody's like, "How do you like stay connected?" And I was like, "Well, everything important eventually makes its way to me, and it's not like I need a constant update about how shitty the world is." You know what I mean? Like it's like. You know, I mean, I'm more hopeful, you know what I mean? Like specifically around like the kind of stuff that we're talking about. I mean, this is what I'm pushing, of course, is, you know, a lot of like how the Indigenous worldview can inform like our future moving forward in so many ways, you know, that, you know, like not even just like environmental stuff, you know what I mean? Like, you know, I was talking about like the ways of understanding yourself, ways of understanding community, ways of understanding relationships, you know, and that like, I don't know, like even our kinship systems are so different, you know, that like I'm constantly trying to figure out what my relation is to people in like the Western way, you know, but then in like, oh, this is my cousin, you know, that's my, it's my niece, you know, it's my like whatever, you know, and, but like there's like, you know, this is my third cousin twice removed. This is my nuncle. Whatever the hell these things mean, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, and I have no idea what
it
means.
Well, in the Yupik way, I have like five grandmas. Like almost everybody's an uncle or cousin. Like, and I don't keep track of like if they're my first cousin or not.
Yeah.
Like, I just, it's all almost family. If they're from the same region, you usually try not to date them.
Yeah.
If, that's like the big thing is like, I'm not going to date anyone from Bristol Bay Area.
It is
probably my cousin.
No, our communities are very small and the relationships are really there. In my journey, in kind of like reclaiming and like re-understanding like who I am and like really like getting into this stuff, like I said, I just found it to be really good. You mm-hmm. know, and that like a lot of our worldview is extremely pragmatic. We were such a pragmatic people, you know, and a lot of the stuff that we're fighting for, it's so silly that we even have to be fighting for it, you know, because I feel so like I feel like there's like I feel stupid like arguing with people about like, no, dude, we need clean air. We need clean water. We need clean land. Like these things are actually like non-negotiable. Mm-hmm. Like this isn't, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, feeling, I don't know, just the world just feels so unbalanced right now. And because it is unbalanced, you know, and that, like, one of the interviews that I was reading, it was between Knud Rasmussen and a shaman, and it was just, like, talking about Sila, you know, like the, I don't know how you would explain it, but, like, the entity that controls the weather. Or, well, it controls a lot of things, but, like, weather is one of them, you know, and he was talking about him, and he was saying that, like, Sila, like, remains away from everything else, like, turned inwards into its own, like, infinite nothingness unless we start disrespecting our food. You know what I mean? Like, unless we start, like, treating things wrongly, you know, and then Sila, like, wakes up. But Sila speaks in weather. Sila doesn't speak in words, you know? And so, like, Sila speaks in storms, and Sila speaks in, you know, like, heat waves and things like that, you know? And it just makes me think a lot about, like, what's happening in the world today. And, you know, again, like, I don't even particularly need anybody to like accept, you know, what we're saying and like what we're talking about with regards to indigenous culture. Cause it, like I said, it's a valid worldview. It works for us, you know, and that kind of the pragmatism it has going for it is that like, it's a worldview where like conservation happens naturally, right? Because we are taking all this stuff into account already, you know, that actually the rivers actually have rights too, you know? And that, you know, maybe it's a little bit like some Lorax shit, right? You know, where it's like, you know, we're speaking for the trees, you know, but like we actually are in relationship with these things and we have relationship with them, you know, and when we speak for them, you know, what we're attempting to do is just kind of like we have an idea, of course, that they want to continue to exist, you know, and we know that they need healthy environments to exist, you know, and so like you don't even need the fish to explicitly tell you that it needs these things in order for you to know it and like to properly like take care of and steward and to respect it as a fellow soul, like you need to, you know, make sure that we take care of those things, right?
Yeah, but like, it's hard because corporations have rights. And so, like, I don't think it's a wild idea for a river or trees to have rights either. Yes. And it's so odd because you need water in order to survive. You need clean air in order to survive. And it seems so innate, but for, I think, so many people, because I keep saying, coming back to, we've just so divorced ourselves from nature, from being part of it. Like, we see ourselves separate from just our environment, other than, like, we've created a really cozy pocket. Like, even being in this soundproof room right now, being able to have this conversation, it's beautiful that we could do this, but it's also, like, people don't really go outside as much, or even if they are outside, there's things that they could still be distracted. Like, I had to remind myself today on a walk to not listen to anything, just to actually listen. And that's mostly because I was scared of a black bear around. Yeah. You know, I wasn't even trying to be mindful of anything else other than I might be getting attacked. But I feel like if we had more people actually, I feel like nature can be some type of therapy, or having people come back to that, coming back to like living outside and getting their own food. Because I think part of being indigenous too is like we fish. We hunt, we gather off the land. And in order for you to do that, you have to have a stewardship or a relationship to the land.
Yeah.
You are obligated to, if you're going to have that like relationship with it, where you both benefit, because they benefit from us being able to take care of them. But we benefit from, you know, being able to gather and have animals that we hunt and gather ourselves. Like, we have that relationship with them too.
Yeah.
So it's mutual.
It is. And I also think it's really important to, like, know where your food comes from. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, my kids 100% know where food comes from, and they understand that, like, this, like the meat in the store, you know, is not just, you know, this pretty little plastic package thing. You know, like they've seen how you get meat. And I think that's important, right? Like, mm-hmm. you know, it's funny that you hear all the stories of people that go vegetarian after they find out, you know, what happens with it. But like, you know, what's one of the places where we're in alignment, I think, is that like from our cultural perspective, things like factory farms would be tantamount to a sin, right? Because there's no way that it would be okay from our perspective to treat another soul like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like we do hunt and kill. We do it all the time, right? You know, but our relationship's different and, you know, treating a soul like that is not okay.
Yeah.
You know, and So, you know, even for me, you know, even though I do eat some food, you know, quite a bit of food from the store, it's like I think about that a lot. You know what I mean? Like there's no way we would treat another soul like that. Whereas when I hunt, well, it's certainly brutal as well, right? But it's done with a much different...
Mm-hmm. Different perspective. And they've been out in the wild. We're eating a bunch of like sad cows and chickens.
Yeah.
Now, of course, I think it has an impact on our own mental health, our own physical health, like because they're all like in factory farms. And I think it impacts the way that we are ourselves because the way those animals were treated. And I mean, for vegetarians, another argument could be like the way that things are farmed. There's a lot of pesticides. Yeah. So even when you're eating, you know, if you're trying to be vegan or vegetarian, there's still things going on with that food and the way it's been harvested that is not right.
Yeah.
And it's impacting everybody. Like there's a lot of gut issues right now, like myself included, because of the way that things are being done with our food. And I think when you have indigenous like knowledge systems, it makes you be aware of like the relationship that you have with the animals that you're hunting or fishing and the plants and intrinsically with each other and yourself.
Yeah.
Like, and that's one thing that I think more people should be advocating for is like, this can help alleviate a lot of issues that are going on if people are aware more of like indigenous value systems and the way that you can, you know, bring that more into the broader community, into the mainstream community is like, hey, like, we could be doing things a lot differently if you just listen to some indigenous folks.
Yeah. And, you know, like I always say, you know, it's definitely not some hippie shit. You know what I mean? Like our worldview is extremely pragmatic. And like I also we're not trying to go back to the past. You know what I mean? Like we're talking about like the modern world and just like living according to these values. Right.
Yeah. Adapting them.
Adapting them. You know, I think about that a lot. You know, just imagine if like a bunch of Yupiks went to space. You know what I mean? Like... You know, 700 years in space, like how would we retain who we are?
Yeah.
You know, and I think a lot of the values are timeless, you know, like they could literally go into space, you know, mm-hmm. they follow us everywhere that we go. And, you know, our values are still valid in the world that we live in today.
Yeah. We would colonize it a lot differently.
Yeah.
Well, that's for sure.
I know. I always like to joke about reverse colonization sometimes. I was like, but we wouldn't have done it that way. I don't think, I don't know, maybe we would have.
Yeah, you know, some alien population will come and colonize us.
Yeah, yeah.
Because we're very, like, just harmonized.
Yeah.
But no, I think that's a little romanticized. But I just want to say I'm, like, so excited for you and, like, proud of you for having this podcast and for, like, I feel like so many people have been wanting you to have one because you're such a great storyteller and you have, like, this very different perspective on what it means to be indigenous in this day and age, especially like an Alaska Native man. Like, I feel like we need to hear more from Alaska Native males. Like, I'm with one and he has such sound advice. He's like such a sage. Shout out to Howdus Brown, my partner. Howdus Brown III. I feel like more Alaska Native men need more of a platform or like to hear from another Alaska Native male who has this richening life experience that you offer. I'm just so stoked for you, man. This is awesome. Like, I was like kind of jittery in the beginning because I'm like, oh, this is so cool. This is great that you're doing it. And I'm just proud of you. So I just wanted to put that. I don't care if you keep that in or not. I just wanted to say that to you.
Well, you know, with the thing is, I think that, you know, a lot of the things that I'm talking about are just things that I'm stewarding, right? You know, like a lot of this stuff just is not some stuff that I made up.
You live this day in and day out. This is your life.
Well, and like even from like the indigenous perspective, like even our masculinity was different. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like kind of like that masculinity, Western, femininity. You know, hyper macho kind of thing, you know, it was totally different. You know, like masculinity is about like awareness and self-control and, you know, like things that I think would be really important for specifically men in America to learn, I think. You know, like I mentioned, you know, this is the way that I was socialized too, but
yeah. You definitely need to, yeah, you need to get like Dorrit or Torin in
yeah.
here.
Yeah, yeah.
Talk about that because you guys were both family engineers for a while. Which yeah. I thought it was
oh, yeah.
pretty cool.
No, that was, you know, actually spending, 13 years as a stay-at-home dad really like really was a huge part of my education. Like number mm-hmm. one, realizing how much work it is and how important it is and how undervalued it is.
Yeah, and I feel like we should be paying stay-at-home parents, like whether you're a mom or a dad, whatever. You're bringing up kids and that's part of a sustainability thing is like, kids are the future. If we're not investing in them, what are we doing?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm a huge fan of universal basic income in general, even though I don't necessarily see the path to getting it, but I could just see how much of a change that could make just because I think there's so much, you know what I mean? Like it's like the promise of the future sometimes that I feel like was never realized, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, with AI, like, we might have to go that route, right?
Except, like, yeah. Yep. So, well, I mean, no, they're just going to have AI do all the jobs and we're still not going to have jobs.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what's going to happen. Like I always dreamed about a future, you know, where it's like, where we get to do whatever we want, you know?
I feel like part of it, we are living
it. And
I think
it's totally valid.
I feel like part of me is kind of living a little bit of it, but I feel like we're also in a really good situation.
Yeah. You know, recently, talking with some of, other indigenous people from like Russia kind of made me feel spoiled as an indigenous person in America. Cause I'm going like, what are we crying about, man? Like, you know, just talking about the things that they were going through and like showing us some documentaries and stuff. And I was like, all right, you know, which doesn't like make excuses for the things that are wrong, you know, but also appreciating the relative position that we're in.
Yeah, you know? But we got to keep pushing it because then we're also universally making it better for everyone else.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But I am just so thankful that you had me on as your first guest. I feel pretty honored.
Yeah.
And
I always
like,
love
our
conversations. I feel like we have good rapport.
Yeah, we usually have really good conversations and I'm always telling Hattie, I'm like, dang, this is what I talked about with Warren. And I come up with my own epiphanies in the middle of our conversations. I'm like, wow, I never thought that before I talked with Warren. Like the whole thing about anger and like that is actually a disguise for me not wanting to say I'm hurt. When we had that a phone call maybe a month ago or something, I was like, dang, I didn't know I felt that way until I had that phone call conversation with you. And that's something you probably can't get through text, right?
Yeah.
Or like, that's why I think this medium, podcast medium is so, it's like, inherent to who we are as human beings in general, because before there was written language, we had oral language. That's why it's so compelling. Like I love podcasts. I love hearing people converse. Like I love hearing ideas being spoken out loud. And then from that, it can be manifested and transmitted. And it's just beautiful.
Yeah.
Like, and I should, Howdy's always like self-conscious about what he says because he knows it's going to be out there forever.
Yeah.
But I feel like I don't have that same filter. No. I'm always just my authentic self. And I'm like, oh, crap, I probably shouldn't have said that.
I'm just going to say whatever I'm going to say, and I'm never going to listen to it again, and I'm going to forget it. And, like, yeah, I'm a huge fan of the oral tradition. You know, I do think it's important, you know, and this is certainly a lot easier than doing some writing.
Yeah, but you do write, and you write well.
Yeah.
But anyways, congrats. I'm proud of you. This has been amazing.
Thanks. I'm glad to have you on. Thank you. Thank you all for listening. Arctica Podcast is recorded on Dena'ina Land in Anchorage, Alaska, part of the Iowa Storyhouse. It is produced by the Alaska Venture Fund. Thanks to the Iowa team and all the supporters who make this podcast possible.